Carnet by Albert Camus. Program 3. Self.
What I mean is this, that one can, with no romanticism, feel nostalgic for lost poverty. A certain number of years lived without money are enough to create a whole sensibility. If he's moved into a different class, the comparison also gives him the feeling that he's lost great wealth. For rich people, the sky is just an extra, a gift of nature. The poor, on the other hand, can see it as it really is, an infinite grace. A guilty conscience needs to confess. A work of art is a confession, and I must bear witness. When I see things clearly, I have only one thing to say. It is in this life of poverty, among these vain or humble people, that I have most certainly touched what I feel is the true meaning of life. Works of art will never provide this, and art is not everything for me. Let it at least be a means. One must not cut oneself off from the world. No one who lives in the sunlight makes a failure of his life. My whole effort, whatever the situation, misfortune or disillusion, must be to make contact again. But even within this sadness, I feel a great leap of joy and a great desire to love, simply at the sight of a hill against the evening sky. Contacts with truth, with nature first of all, and then with the art of those who've understood, and with my own art if I'm capable of it. Otherwise, the sea, sunshine, and delight, with the moist lips of desire, will simply lie there in front of me. A prisoner in the cave. I lie alone and look at the shadow of the world. A January afternoon. The heart of the air is full of cold. Everywhere a thin film of sunlight that you could split with a touch of your fingernail, but which clothes everything in an eternal smile. Who am I? And what can I do except enter into the movement of the branches and the light? Be this ray of sunlight in which my cigarette smoulders away, this soft and gentle passion breathing in the air. If I try to reach myself, it's at the heart of this light that I am to be found. And if I try to taste and understand this delicate flavor that contains the secret of the world, it's again myself that I find at the heart of the universe. Myself. That is to say, this intense emotion which frees me from my surroundings. Soon my attention will be filled again with other things and with the world of men. But let me cut out this moment from the cloth of time as other men leave a flower in the pages of a book. In it they enclose the memory of a walk in which they were touched by love. I also walk through the world, but I am caressed by a god. Life is short, and it's a sin to waste one's time. I waste my time all day long, while other people say that I do a great deal. Today is a resting place, and my heart goes out to meet itself. If I still feel a grain of anxiety, it is at the thought of this unseizable moment slipping through my fingers like a ball of quicksilver. Let those who want to stand aside from the world. I no longer feel sorry for myself, for now I see myself being born. I am happy in this world, for my kingdom is of this world. A cloud passes, and a moment grows pale. I die to myself. The book opens at a well-loved page. how tasteless it is when compared with the book of the world. Is it true that I've suffered? Is it not true that I am suffering, and that I am drunk with this suffering because it's made up of that sun and these shadows, of this warmth and that coldness, which can be felt afar off at the very heart of the air? What cause to wonder if something dies or men suffer when everything is written on this window where the sky pours forth its fullness? I can say, and in a moment I shall say, that what counts is to be true. And then everything fits in, both humanity and simplicity. And when am I truer and more transparent than when I am the world? Moment of adorable silence. But the song of the world rises, and I, a prisoner chained deep in the cave, am filled with delight before I have time to desire. Eternity is here while I was waiting for it. Now I can speak. I do not know what I could wish for rather than this continued presence of self with self. What I want now is not happiness, but awareness. One thinks one's cut oneself off from the world, but it's enough to see an olive tree upright in the golden dust, or beeches glistening in the morning sun, to feel this separation melt away. Thus with me. I become aware of the possibilities for which I am responsible. Every minute of life carries with it its miraculous value and its face of eternal youth. Pisa and its men lying in front of the Duomo. One comes to understand the quarrels of the 15th and 16th centuries. Here, each town is important, its own features and profound truth. Things and people are waiting for me, and doubtless I am waiting for them, and desiring them with all my strength and sadness. But here I earn the right to be alive, by silence and by secrecy. The miracle of not having to talk about oneself. I shall not grow resigned. With all my silence, I shall protest to the very end. There is no reason to say it had to be. The clouds thicken over the cloister, and night gradually darkens the flagstones bearing the moral virtues attributed to the dead. If someone here told me to write a book about morality, it would have to have 100 pages, and 99 would be blank. On the last page, I should write, I recognize only one duty, and that is to love. And as far as everything else is concerned, I say no. I say no with all my strength. Fiesole. We lead a difficult life, not always managing to fit our actions to the vision we have of the world. And when I think I've caught a glimpse of the color of my fate, it shoots off out of sight. We struggle and suffer to reconquer our solitude. But a day comes when the earth has its simple and primitive smile. Then it's as if the struggles and life within us were rubbed out. Millions of eyes have looked at this landscape, and for me, it's like the first smile of the world. It takes me out of myself, in the deepest meaning of the expression. It assures me that nothing matters except my love, and that even this love has no value for me unless it remains innocent and free. It denies me a personality and deprives my suffering of its echo. The world is beautiful, and this is everything. The great truth which it patiently teaches me is that neither the mind nor even the heart has any importance. and that a stone warmed by the sun, or the cypress tree swelling against the empty sky, set a boundary to the only world in which to be right has any meaning. Nature without men. This world reduces me to nothing. It carries me to the very end. Without anger, it denies that I exist. And, agreeing to my defeat, I move towards a wisdom where everything has been already conquered. Except that tears come into my eyes, and this great sob of poetry makes me forget the truth of the world. My effort now is to carry this presence of myself to myself through to the very end, to maintain it whatever aspect my life takes on, even at the price of the loneliness which I now know is so difficult to bear. Not to give way, that's the whole secret. Not to surrender, not to betray. A certain persistence in despair finally gives birth to joy. And the same men who, in San Francesco, live by the side of these red flowers, keep in their cells a skull to nourish their meditations, seeing Florence from their windows and death on the table before them. And if I now feel that I've come to a turning point in my life, this is not because of what I've won, but of what I've lost. Within me I feel a deep and intense strength that will enable me to live as I intend. If today I feel so distant from everything, it's because I have strength only to love and to admire. Life with its face of tears and sun. Life in the salt sea and on warm stones. Life as I love and understand it. As I caress it, I feel my love and despair gathering strength within me. Today is not like a resting place between yes and no. It is both yes and no. No and rebellion against everything which is not tears and sunlight. Yes to my life, whose future promise I now feel within myself for the first time. A year of burning intensity, which is coming to an end. And Italy. I'm uncertain of the future, but have achieved total liberty towards my past and towards myself. Here lies my poverty and my soul wealth. It's as if I were beginning the game all over again, neither happier nor unhappier than before, but aware now of where my strength lies, scornful of my own vanities, and filled with that lucid fervor which impels me forward towards my fate. I don't care about my personality, and I'm not interested in cultivating it. I don't want to treat my life as an experiment, but to be what my life makes me. It is I who am the experiment, and it's life that forms and controls me. If I had enough strength and patience, I know how completely impersonal I should become, how far my strength would carry me on the path to active nothingness. Am I now capable of what other people call a serious attitude to life? Am I lazy? I don't think so, and have given myself proof to the contrary. But have we the right to refuse difficulties under the pretext that we don't like them? An intellectual? Yes, and never deny it. An intellectual is someone whose mind watches itself. I like this because I'm happy to be both halves, the watcher and the watched. Can they be brought together? Well, this is a practical question. We must get down to it. I despise intelligence really means I cannot bear my doubts. I prefer to keep my eyes open. What sordid misery is in the condition of a man who works and in a civilization based on men who work? But we must hang on and not let go. The natural reaction is always to scatter one's talents outside work, to make people admire you the easy way, to create an audience and an excuse for cowardice and play-acting. Most marriages are organized on this basis. Another inevitable reaction is to try to be clever about it. Besides, the two things fit in very well together. If you let yourself go physically, neglect your body, and let your willpower slacken, the first thing to do is to keep silent, to abolish audiences, and learn to be your own judge. To keep a balance between an active concern for the body and an attentive awareness of being alive. To give up all feeling that the world owes you a living and devote yourself to achieving two kinds of freedom. Freedom from money and freedom from your own vanity and cowardice. To have rules and to stick to them. 2 years is not too long a time to spend thinking about one single point. You must wipe out all earlier stages and concentrate all your strength, first of all on forgetting nothing, and then on waiting patiently. If this price is paid, then there's one chance in 10 of escaping from the most sordid and miserable of conditions. That of the man who works. It's always useless to try to cut oneself off, even from other people's cruelty and stupidity. You can't say, "I didn't know about it." There is nothing less excusable than war and the appeal to national hatreds. But once war has come, it's both cowardly and useless to try to stand on one side under the pretext that one is not responsible. Ivory towers are down. Indulgence is forbidden for oneself as well as for other people. It's both impossible and immoral to judge an event from outside. One keeps the right to hold this absurd misfortune in contempt only by remaining inside it. I sometimes wanted a violent death, a death in which you'd be forgiven for screaming as the soul was torn from you. At other times I dreamed of a long and constantly lucid end, so that it should not be said that I'd been taken by surprise. In my absence, to know, finally. But you suffocate in the earth. If I were to die unknown to the world, in the depths of a cold prison, the sea at the last moment would fill my cell, would come to lift me above myself, and help me to die without hatred.
That was John Shrapnel reading extracts from Carnet, the notebooks of Albert Camus, translated by Philip Thody and selected by Anthony Asprey. The program was directed by John Theocharis.